Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
So, hey, Carl, you know, last time we touched on, I felt like we were just, you know, scratching the surface of how do we go about teaching reliability and just becoming better at teaching. Have you ever seen any of the video of, Feynman lectures?
The physics, you're talking about physics?
Yeah, the physics guy. And it doesn't matter whether you're interested in physics or not. You watch one of his lectures, you are. When I'm thinking of
Neil deGrasse Tyson in the astrophysics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are people, and I ran into this when I worked with Dick Moss. I had some video of his that somebody taped one of his classes. And I'm watching it at home, and my wife walks by and goes, I have no idea what he's talking about, but I really like his voice and how he's doing it. You know, so there's when I think of teaching, it's a field in and of itself, as you mentioned in our last episode. But it's also I've learned enough to really appreciate people that are really good at it. And you might wow. You know, Feynman was an excellent physicist, but I think he excelled at teaching, at explaining exceedingly complex subjects in a way that people could grasp and understand. And there's a handful of people like that. So I think it's wherever our audience is at, you know, is if you find somebody that really is able to convey subject matter to you and transfer knowledge to you really well, one, enjoy it. And two is look at what they're doing. How does it work? What techniques or patterns or you know, how do they do that? And you can learn by that observation and take away some of those concepts or ideas in your own ability to set up and teach.
I think one of the first things to realize here is that teaching is a body of knowledge. It's what you're teaching is a body of knowledge, but the skills of teaching and how you go about it is a body of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I run into this on team leadership because I have classes where I teach people how to facilitate FMEAs, for example.
Right.
And the first thing I have to recognize with the students is that the knowledge of FMEA does not make you a good facilitator. Facilitation itself is a body of knowledge and has certain skills. Similarly, teaching is like that. And so let me just build on some of the things you asked at the end of the last podcast. You were talking about preparation, and we mentioned stories. You also mentioned understanding the subject. And before I go on to some of those, I wanted to bring up one of my own, which is connection. Mm-hmm. And I agree completely about know your audience. And I take another step where I try to connect. And I'm sure you do the same thing. And I'll walk around the classroom, look people in the eye and say, hello, Mary, welcome. Tell me why you're here, what experience do you have with whatever the subject is, and talk a little bit about myself and my experience and try to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important. You don't want to be a lecturer. Lecturing will only take you, make up a number, 10% of the way towards knowledge. I mean, sitting in a lecture is only going to take you a small percentage.
Right.
And so what we want is for people to be involved. The connection, it opens up the channel of communication. It gets people interested in who you are, what you're doing, makes people interested in what you're saying and paying attention. It also helps with distractibility, which is a huge issue today. Teaching. So I just wanted to mention that connection thing.
Well, there's also something to be careful there about. It's one of the things I saw. We had years and years ago, I was working in a plant and we dealt with polymers a lot. And And a new hire into our manufacturing engineering group was a PhD polymer physicist or something, whatever his fancy title was. But he reminded us all the time to call him doctor. And, you know, that, well, okay. He'd come into a meeting and go, well, I studied this in rare college and I'm just too important to worry about what your pitiful little ideas are. This is what we do. And he was wrong like 10 times out of 9, you know, but he had such a high opinion of himself that he would lead with his credentials. As opposed to, we had a guy from a corporate R&D group came in who is also, I learned later, was a very skilled, very educated, great experience. And he came in and said, you know, don't you hate it when it doesn't do what you think it's going to do? And that's why we called him.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Which was a completely different entry into this. He says, well, here's one way you could look at it is this way. And then he said, well, we're trying that. And he goes, well, here's where that might not work because it doesn't take into account this aspect of this polymer chain and does this and this. And he kind of walked us from where we were, understanding our pain, why we were wanting to learn this subject. And he never mentioned, I didn't learn until years later that he was so educated. And so, you know, he was just masterful at starting with exactly where we were and acknowledging it. Yeah, that is frustrating, you know, kind of topic. And I thought it was brilliant.
So the point's very well taken. So when you're making this connection with the audience, don't make the connection based on your credentials. Make the connection based on stories about who you are, some of your experience, things they can relate to, where you've been. No, it's really a put off to lead with the credentials. So I think we're agreeing on that.
Yeah.
So let me just then go into something you brought up towards the end of the last podcast, which is preparation. I really think it's important. And I'm going to cover two parts of this. You want to prepare your material, which means you know it. You have to understand the subject well enough so that you don't have to read your slides. You don't want to read material. You want to talk to the audience once you've made the connection. So if you're teaching a principle, you might look at the slide just so you know where you are. Then you look to the audience and you say, here's the essence of this principle. Here's what I want you to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is part of preparation. So you may have to teach in your room, talking to a wall, until you're confident enough you can communicate the principles in your own words, and you're not dependent on reading or some other mechanism or, you know. So I think that part of that preparation is the knowledge. Other parts, of course, is organization.
Yep.
Having your material well organized in the right sequence, in the right outline. But the other part of preparation I wanted to bring up is to tap into your personal passion. And I've done this the wrong way for a lot of my career. I didn't realize, I thought passion was for sports, passion was for love, passion was for whatever, but it wasn't part of teaching. And I've learned in the mid-career by making mistakes on this, that if you tap into what really excites you about the subject matter, things that you can relate to personally, things that interest you, it shows up on your face, it shows up in your body language, it shows up in your tone, and it communicates so well. So to me, that's part of preparation.
Oh, yeah. You can go through a technical presentation saying, all right, here's the 10 steps to do an FMEA. And you could go slide one, step one, we do this. Step two, we do this. But if you know that, for me anyway, with FMEA, it's a beautiful way to organize and get a group all in coherent functioning, right? They have a common set of topics now that they can organize and go execute. And we know that it makes a difference. But the voice changes from step one, do this, to here's how this, or, you know, this this is step one, and this is what it sets the frame up for us to get to this objective. But the voice pattern changes dramatically. And I think what that's what you're emphasizing is that if you can connect it to what you see as the most exciting part of it and be genuinely excited about it. And some topics are more difficult than others, right? Teaching somebody some of squares in ANOVA calculations. Well, you know, I had to draw pretty deep in the resources to get that one to be exciting.
No, I hear you. And still, it's worth it. Because if you can find something about ANOVA, maybe you've done a project where you really help this group by understanding those principles. That would convey. I remember going back to the FME example, that I tapped into my desire to not have problems with the product that I'm buying. Mm-hmm. I buy a product. I don't want to have a problem with it. And I said, well, how many of you want to have develop trouble-free products, ones that your customers are happy with? And they all raise their hand. I go, well, that's what brings us to work each day, isn't it? And FMEA can help you do that. And then we started talking about how each part of FMEA can create that trouble-free product. Mm-hmm. So there's ways to do this, and I'm sure there's not as easy, but there's probably ways to do it with ANOVA or other techniques that seem more humdrum. But if you can bring them to life in some way, and this is the essence of good teaching. I've seen this done wrong so often. You know, I think going back in some of our kids' schools where teachers, some of them were really good at inspiring and some of them were just going through the motions.
Right.
And the end result with the kids is day and night.
Yeah. Yeah. Now which brings up, I mean, you just use day, night and day reversed. I think you did it deliberately, by the way, using analogy or story from your own background to illustrate points. And there's a balance there. You don't want to stand there and tell stories all day long. You actually got to get to some connection to the content and so on. But it's a way to set up and frame the excitement and get it going in yourself. Reverse of that, though, I think is also important, is a way to get to know your audience, especially if you've done your homework with the audience prior, is, well, what are those stories? What are the deep secrets that it's legends and lore or nobody, it's a skeleton in the closet kind of thing. And tell me more about that. What do you know about that? And especially if Carl, you've been in this situation. You go to a group and they say, well, last year we had a problem and it cost us $50 million. We don't want to do that again. Well, let's not let a good disaster go to waste. All right, let's get into this. your motivation might be the avoiding a previous disaster, but you can use that as to build some excitement. Is this, well, that's not insurmountable. FMEA is a great tool to get yourself ahead of that curve and, you know, do this, this, and this. But build on it. Build on that. Some of it's fear, which is not a great place if you can avoid it, but having a wonderful outcome or delighting your customer, those kinds of things are great. Or I found, and it was an ANOVA example using a design of experiments, was that we were part of setting it up was we need to be prepared to be surprised. We don't know the answer right now. We have 7 or 8 variables here and we don't know which one's really going to be important. And we ran the experiment and we're doing the calculation and it comes out pretty cleanly that we had no idea that that was the driving force here. And it was just, it was like silence in the group as we ran the analysis and we're talking it through. And it was like, we had no idea. Let's make sure.
that's so fascinating because people are inherently curious. And so that curiosity can be used as a way to keep people interested and involved. Mm-hmm. I wanted to build on the story point because, you know, we could do a whole podcast on stories. In my first reaction years ago when I was doing some early teaching and people said, you know, couldn't you share more stories? And I'm thinking to myself back then, this is probably the early 80s or mid 80s. I'm thinking to myself, but what the heck stories? I mean, I'm teaching principles. Isn't that more important? Why mm-hmm. do people care about stories? And then I learned how important stories are, and they have to be the right stories. In other words, you want to teach a principle? Well, then tell a story about the principle, how you came to understand it, where you first learned about it, things that people can relate to. Mm-hmm. And I started bridging those stories into all of my teaching. And then I remember having a protege, somebody that was learning what I do so they could eventually pick it up. And that person came to me and said, afterwards, said, I like what you're doing. I've been to your class and I think I can teach it, but I don't have any stories. And I thought to myself, oh, I know you have stories. And so we basically encouraged him to develop his own stories, or if need be, borrow my stories. In other words, you heard this story, but stories need to be part of the way you convey knowledge. That was the point that I learned there.
Well, if you go back to the last 600 plus podcasts in this series, I think every single one of them we've told stories.
Yeah.
You know, it's just part a parcel of the way we convey. And it's not new. This is, goes back to around the campfire 10,000 years ago, as we're telling stories, we're telling fables, we're telling history, you know, we're doing all these things, but it's stories allow us to convey ideas and concepts and so on. What I think our point is that if you're teaching a class on subject X, the stories need to be coherent with that and consistent with it and relatable to your audience. Think of my design for reliability classes. The easiest way to get the electrical engineers to shut down and go out of the room is start talking about mechanical safety or mechanical safety margins and vice versa. It's, you need to be, as we talked about in the last episode, in the language and in the area and in addressing what that audience is expecting or needs. And the stories is a way for us to bridge those things into ground. I think it's called anchoring or grounding the concepts.
Yeah.
Now, physically, biophysically, the way our brain works is that if we tell a story, it gives them a visual, an auditory, a context. As we were in a meeting, we were talking about this, or we're on the shop floor and we observe this. Each of those very short phrases sets a different context of which you and I and our audience has relationship with. They've been in those circumstances. They can then connect this principle to that context. But if we just say principle number one is blah, well, it stands alone. Other than the word one, principle one, which makes us think that there's might probably more than one, there's not a lot of connections there for us. If we say, you know, principle one, and we tell a story about I was on a factory floor once and we did this, 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 and this idea came across, and that, you know, connects to the, now there's, if that is germane to the audience, if they have similar experiences to being on the floor, it helps them see that context in a different way, and it connects to all of their previous memories.
And I agree completely. I want to share with the audience here that you might, some of you might be thinking, I'm an engineer, I don't tell stories. The whole point is what Fred and I are saying is you can develop that talent. You can develop the skill. And stories are not trivial. So you have to prepare. And so I wanted to characterize this as part of the preparation. It's not something that you get to a point in your teaching and then for the first time you think, what's a story? You need to actually think ahead of time and think about what stories can relate to what parts. And if you need to, practice it so you're comfortable with it, so that it looks unprepared, so to speak.
Yep.
But it's all part of preparation. Fred, I wanted to interject another topic on teaching, which is, to me, is one of my most important, is questions. Mm-hmm. And I think of the Socrates method and all we've learned. It's probably in the latter part of my career that I've learned that questioning is the best way to learn. So if you can encourage your students, or more than encourage, I tell every one of my students on the first hour of day one that I will be going around the room and asking them questions. I'm not putting them on the spot. I'm not trying to embarrass them. It's because we're a safe place, but by putting things in your own words, you will learn.
Yep.
And so I use questioning to the students on every principle. And so I say, Joe, How would you describe this principle, you know, or Susan, what would you say about this? And I use that process of questioning to open up the learning process with the students. And I highly recommend that as part of the teaching protocol. I'm sure you do it. And I just wanted to communicate.
Oh, yeah. There's an extension to that, though. It's also, instead of, you know, tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them what you told them. And you can interject questions to check on understanding and increase engagement, those kind of things. But I think you can, another technique that goes a step beyond just asking a question is set up a problem and let them wrestle with it. And then how would you go about solving this? Here's the circumstance. What's the next step? And then have a discussion about it. And go, all right, here's either they'll create it themselves, which I think is then they have the story of how they solved this problem, right? Which is real, that it was an artificial problem in the class, but they solved it. They put the connections together. Those make a stronger lasting memory than hearing it or getting it in a lecture and then walking away. But that takes a lot more prep to guide students in the discovery of the concepts, which is different than seeing it on a slide and then talking about it. And so I think there's different degrees of that questioning process of helping people uncover the truths that you're trying to convey is a skill, is a masterful skill if you can get to it, but it's something to strive for.
Yeah, I was looking at a quote this morning that I'm going to use as part of my teaching from Socrates. I cannot teach anybody anything. I can only make them think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just really what we're talking about is creating the environment where people can think and work through the processes of creative thinking until they come to the conclusion that we're trying to teach.
Yep. Yeah. Now, you know, that's probably subject to a whole nother series of podcasts is about whatever happened to thinking through problems, you know, it affects so many things that we do, you know,
it's the best way to learn, frankly,
it is. And there's so many parts of that. So that's probably something we need to come back to and work on. Mm-hmm. But I suspect there's more to what we're talking about here. We probably need to get some feedback and come back and revisit this topic again.
I would enjoy that.
All right. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and there you'll find a contact form. You can get in touch with us and join the conversation. You can also find Carl and I on LinkedIn or on our About pages on Ascendo. And we really do enjoy getting feedback and comments and questions and ideas from the audience. It's just about every day. I know that at least in my box, my circle of emails and input devices and stuff, I get one or more comments or suggestions or ideas. And many of those get an immediate response, but more often as they land in one or more of our podcasts or articles or part of our content to share with a wider audience. So don't be shy. Send us what you think. And one, we learn. We help you move past whatever question that you have, if we can, or help you see it in a different way. But more importantly is that it helps our community because we share those questions and our thoughts on them with as wide an audience as we can. So we certainly do look forward to hearing from you. So that, Carl, let's. I have this cat that I need to teach. Is that a challenge, or is that?
We've got a dog that we're working on right now.
Okay, yeah, that might be a little more palatable.
Yes,
the cat just looks at me like, "Yeah, you're kidding, right?"
Yes, not possible.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, we all face our challenges, and we can learn along the way. I guess that's a good way to sum it up.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks, Carl. Good topic. We'll have to come back and visit this again and again.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.